What is up, all you rowdy baseball fans? Welcome to your first off-season episode of At the Corner. I'm Zach, and as always, here in just a little bit, I'll be joined by my co-host Chuck. And Justin Lotta was kind enough to spare some time to sit down with us this week and talk about some off-season musings. And there have certainly not been anything short of quite a few. We're going to talk about financial insecurities as a result of Bally. We're going to talk about the confusing Cal Quantrill DFA, the doesn't make sense Scott Barlow trade, at least for now. The Aniel De Los Santos deal, what the heck the team is doing with the outfield, 40-man roster moves, Cade Smith, Jonathan Rodriguez. It's all here. I know for a fact there is more stuff that we could have talked about, but we already went for darn near an hour and a half. So with that said, oh yeah, there's a mailbag in here too. A couple of you guys asked us some questions, so we answered them. I won't take up any of your more of your time. Let's go. You're listening to At the Corner, a Cleveland Guardians podcast by Zach Caldwell and Chuck B.
Fastball hit in the air. A swing and a drive. Away back. Boom!
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the hiatus has come to an end. We're back at the corner. I'm Zach. I'm joined as always by my co-host Chuck. Chuck, say hello.
What's up, Zach? How you doing, brother?
Good, man. It's good. It is damn good to see you. That is for sure. So for those of you who don't know, we record on Zoom. We do a little like a FaceTime powwow. And Chuck, why don't you introduce our guest for today?
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce my role model, the great Justin Latta.
Woo! Yep, Justin Latta is with us. Welcome.
I don't know if I should be anybody's role model, but I do appreciate Chuck and I appreciate you guys. How's it going?
Well, Justin, it's good to have you, man. And it is, I think it's good to sit down and talk some ball after we've been removed from the disappointing end to the season. It's good to come back after taking a little bit of a break. Although I think I can speak for us all when I say I miss baseball, man. And we still got a long, long off season ahead of us. So some topics that we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about Steven Vogt. We're going to talk about the Cal Quantrill trade. We'll talk about Scott Barlow. We're going to talk about arbitration things. We're going to talk about some financial uncertainty that's going on for not just the Guardians. The Texas Rangers also fall into that category. And just some general baseball musings as well. You know, the owners recently met to approve the A's.
We could shit on John Fisher too. That's fun.
Yes, absolutely, because we need to. We'll talk about the A's being approved to move to Vegas. The sudden death of the Padres owner and what that could potentially look like. I know Jeff and myself both believe that their financial restructure timeline is going to be rapidly accelerated, so we're going to jump into it. So the first thing that I think is worth talking about is the hiring of Steven Vogt. Vogt was not even on my radar, really. I know that he is well-regarded as a solid clubhouse personality. He's always been well-liked by his former teammates. Where are you guys at on Vogt? Did you want someone else? Are you okay with the hiring? Where are y'all at?
I'll go first, I guess. From the get-go of this thing, I wanted someone younger. That was kind of my I knew we weren't going to get counsel, and it was like they were just going to – it was going to be a wide net of managerial interviews. I love Vogt. It's really a personality hire. And you know, he seems like a little bit analytically driven, but it's really about the personality and what he could do with the clubhouse and stuff like that. And hopefully, as he gains experience, the X's and O's come along with that. But I like it from the get-go. I didn't have once Patson tweeted out that he's a serious hire, a serious potential candidate, I knew it was done. I knew it was going to be him. The council never had a chance. That was never going to happen. But I'm excited about it. I am. Is it going to work out? Who knows? But I'm excited about it, especially from a personality standpoint.
Justin, how are you feeling about it?
I think it's a good direction to go in. I mean, I think it made sense for them to do due diligence on Craig Council. And I thought there was a good chance Council was going to go there. I certainly didn't think the Craig Council thing was going to play out like it did, which I don't think anybody did, because everybody was connecting him to the Mets. And then you saw, you know, if he doesn't go to the Mets, he'll come back to Milwaukee and they'll just match whatever. Clearly, you know, everyone should have listened. They said that when he was on the market that he wanted to reset the contract status and the offers and the salary for managers, and he sure did that, right? So I guess everyone should have believed him when he said that. Didn't think it was going to go in that direction. But I think it made sense to weigh all those options. Vogt, for me, was probably – I mean, he was as good a candidate as anybody out there. I mean, yes, he doesn't have Council's experience, and that's going to – you know, we're going to see how that plays out, really, because this team hasn't had an experienced manager in quite some time. I think Cleveland's process is probably better now than it was when they hired Manny Act. I mean, like everybody says, Terry Francona fell into their lap. They, I don't say they lucked out on that one, but they, you know, it just worked out incredibly well for them. They had to go out and hire Manny Act, so they haven't really had this whole discussion in a while. So I think the process played out really well. I think Andy McCullough, was it not Andy McCullough? Clayton McCullough, that's the writer. Clayton McCullough from the Dodgers would have been just as good a hire. But I do like some of the things that Vogt brings to the table. So I think it's a good direction to go, and we'll just see if the experience factor, you know, really matters in the end.
I think well, that's the thing. It's like you never know where experience is going to go until you get it. Every manager starts somewhere, whether it's a bench coach being hired as a manager, and you know, Vogt isn't that removed from being a player. So he is still very much in tune with the current culture among players. I think this is a good hire. I think I said it in an episode that we did earlier this year where we were talking about Tito potentially retiring. And I said, you cannot afford to get this decision wrong with the current state of how many young players that the team has. You have guys that are still developing. You have guys that are impressionable. You have guys that, you know, if you hire the wrong person and they don't want to come to the clubhouse, guess what? They're not going to put in 110%. I think from everything I've read about Steven Vogt, he's that kind of guy. He's going to rally his players. They're going to want to play for him. He's the type of guy that can give a speech in the clubhouse and his guys are going to want to run through a brick wall for him. I think that's where we're at. And I think that's super important. And it's not like he's going in blind. You know, there's still some, he has a depth of experience around him. Chris Valaika is staying. Sandy's staying, you know, obviously the departure of Mike Barnett and Mike Sarbaugh and some other staff members as well. And the team does still need a bench coach because DeMarlo Hale is back with Blue Jays. But I don't think it's entirely something to be too worried about. If you go on Facebook and read any of the comments about when they announced the hire for Vogt, some of the older fan generation seems to believe that it's not a good hire at all, which I say nonsense, because the players are still there, guys. Come on. They're still going to go out. They're still going to play. They're still going to compete. These are still world-class athletes. We have a platinum Glover on our team now and Andreas Jimenez, which we'll touch on later. But I think it's a good spot. You guys, I could have never possibly in a million years seen the Cubs hiring Craig Counsell. That whole thing was baseball espionage at its finest, because David Ross was still employed. If that had gone public before it was finalized, oh my goodness, the ensuing hellstorm that would have happened is absolutely nuts. So yeah, I think we'll be okay. The team's in good hands. You know, Chris and Mike in the front office, you know, they do their due diligence. The fact that they brought him back for a second interview is when I knew that it was pretty much a done deal. So we have some team-specific player stuff to talk about. We'll move into kind of progressive timeline-wise. We'll move into the Cal Quantrill DFA. So the 40-man roster add to protect players from the Rule 5 draft was this past week. And Cal Quantrill found himself at, unfortunately, a DFA. I think it's unfortunate because I certainly think they could have gotten something more for him, maybe. But then Chris Antonetti, you know, as much as it hurt Cal getting DFA'd, comes out in a press conference the next day and says Cal's arbitration payroll did not play into our salary plans. And if you're like me, you're scratching your bald head going, now what in the hell does that mean? Attendance was up 41%. And then the very next day, The Athletic publishes an article stating that Bally is considering dropping the Guardians and Rangers TV contracts. For anybody who doesn't know, Bally pays the Guardians about $55, $60 million a year for their TV contract. That is a significant chunk of change to just have up and disappear. So let's just keep progressive. Let's start with where y'all are at on Cal. I'll just get my initial feelings out of the way. I hate it, but I'll come back to that. Justin, I'll give you this one first, where you're at on Cal. Do you think DFAing him was a mistake?
I guess we're going to find out. That's a cop-out answer. But I think the real question is, how do the Guardians find pitching depth from here? They have to be, you know, like you said, you mentioned the TV contract. You're going to go into the season possibly relying on, you know, a starter who guy has been hurt two of the last 3 years. You've got another starter who only made two starts this past season. You've got three rookies. And they didn't even want to have to dip into all three of those rookies. There was almost a guarantee that you were going to see Logan Allen at some point in 2023 because he had to be out of the 40-man roster this coming winter. And, you know, how they've operated the last couple of years, it was pretty obvious he was going to get a shot this year.
Tanner and Gavin were definitely not in that picture, though.
Yeah, I think Tanner pushed the issue no matter what. I think everybody could see that coming. He was going to push the issue. I think Cleveland, obviously, if had all things gone well, they would have probably only gone to Logan and Tanner. But, you know, everything didn't work out for them, which, you know, sometimes happens. Bieber was hurt again, although he was deep enough in the season at that point. And I think the real – not the mistake. If you're talking about mistakes, I think the Cal thing specifically isn't really about Cal Quantrill, right? It's about how you're planning the rest of your roster. It's can you trade Shane Bieber now? Maybe not. I don't know. It's going to be tough because I felt like Shane Bieber was one of those spots on the roster where you could find a trade that may be able to help you add an outfielder that can hit or address some offensive issues and trade him before you go into the season and potentially have to, all you have to show for him is a qualifying offer. Because if Cleveland gets into the later part of the season and they decide they want to move on from Shane Bieber, this isn't going well, whatever you trade for him is going to basically be the equivalent of that qualifying offer. So you know, that's kind of up in the air. But I think it's what it represents is because Cleveland lost the flexibility now to trade him to upgrade other parts of the roster. And can you win going into next year with Bieber, McKenzie? Can you count on them to throw 180 innings? Can you count on all your rookies to throw 180 innings? And who are you going to dip into if guys get hurt? Because your depth is all guys who also don't have experience, and they also come with their own injury checklist too. So it's not about Cal himself specifically. It's about how this impacts the rest of the roster. I think we can all agree Cal didn't pitch well last year, and he was pitching through injuries at times, and maybe that is a decent chunk of money to give to a guy who you don't feel confident about. But I'm curious to see how it affects the rest of how they build this roster going the next year, and how they're going to build pitching depth and how they're going to address their offensive issues this offseason.
Lots of questions still. Chuck, I know you probably have some strong feelings about this.
When it first happened, I was stunned. Like, I remember last year we traded Nolan Jones for Juan Brito. I was in a supermarket shopping, and when I refreshed my Twitter and they announced the Juan Brito trade, I dropped a can of tomato sauce glass on the floor in the middle of a supermarket. When they traded Cal Quantrill, I had like a broomstick in my hand in my apartment, and I dropped it, and then my wife's like, "What was that?" I was stunned. Justin, were you stunned by it when it first happened?
I was definitely not expecting it. Yeah, I will say that. I was not expecting it.
And so then I try not to panic. I think they got what they could for him. They never missed some on value. And they tried to get a deal for him, and then they just got what they could. And I don't think it's not a make or break kind of move. I think people were overreacting, but I do worry about the pitching depth. I'm worried about McKenzie's health. I'll say this, though. I don't think Bieber is more of a guarantee. I'm getting a bad feeling. I still think there's a 50-50 chance Bieber gets moved. Justin, what do you think about that? I have a bad feeling. I feel like it's still 50-50 if he gets moved.
I think they can move him if they get the right offer. I don't think Cleveland, you know, outside of Jose Ramirez at this point, except for, you know, John Morosi has other wishes apparently, but outside of Jose Ramirez, I think they would be willing to move anybody in the right deal, and that includes Shane Bieber. It definitely would complicate their rotation going into next year if they would do it, but I have a hard time believing that the offer that they would need to trade Shane Bieber is going to come to them. Like, we know how this team operates when they trade, right? This is why you're right about Cal too, about, you know, getting value for him as much as they could, yeah, because they don't ever give in on what they think a player is worth. If they don't get an offer they think is worth it, then they just don't make the trade. So I have a hard time believing that trade for Bieber is going to happen. Maybe some team will be desperate enough and blow them away. I mean, that's what the Rays did with the Aaron Civale deal, right? They got exactly what they wanted out of that deal. And if that deal pops up for Bieber, then yeah, they trade him. I just think it's a bigger question of whether or not they're going to get that deal. And they're going to have to put a higher value on him now because of what he represents to the pitching staff for 2024 based on what they just did.
Yep. I think the Cal DFA pretty much signals that they have zero intent to move Bieber. And I don't think you can afford to move him. I mean, who's going to take his place? You have no idea what version of Tristan McKenzie is going to show up to spring training. You have three rookies who are still, you know, refining their craft and developing, and that's a good thing. But I mean, that experience goes a long way and it plays. I think I'd be perfectly okay with them keeping Bieber at this point and just taking the comp pick. Or, you know, if Bieber has a down year, you might still be able to negotiate something with him, although maybe not. Aaron Nola just signed 7 years, $172 million with the Phillies, and I don't think Aaron Nola is that good. Like, he's good. He's a career under four ERA guy. He had a 5.5 WAR season, I believe, last year. Not this past season.
He's very dependable.
Yes, he's a guy that'll go out and give you seven innings probably two-thirds of the time. And his numbers are not terrible, but he did regress in 2023 from 2022. He had a 3.6 F4 season in 2023 as opposed to a 5-plus WAR season in 2022. WAR for pitchers is kind of complicated, but, you know, that still matters. Obviously, they think, you know, he can probably be a 4.5, 5 WAR guy every year. Is Bieber that? Probably not anymore. It comes back to what Carl Willis said about, you know, he can throw 95, 96 and give you 18 starts a year, or he can throw 91 to 93 and give you 30 starts a year. It's just the nature of the business. We'll see. I think Bieber's here to stay. Unless the season is an absolute tank job by the trade deadline, I think they keep
it. I think he's here to stay too. I have a weird feeling that it's not as a slam dunk as we think it is. That's all I'm saying.
That's what I was getting at. I think if the season is an absolute crap job by the trade deadline, like, no joke, more than 10 games out of first place, you have injuries, you have guys struggling at the plate, all hope is lost coming into the dog days of summer, yeah, then you probably trade him. You can find somebody that'll pay for him. But, you know, at that point, you're at the mercy of people know you need to move him, and the price probably goes down at least a little bit. Not that I think Bieber would fetch that much right now, but he'd fetch more now than he would in that scenario. So there's definitely some pressure on the front office to figure that out. And that kind of plays into my next thing I wanted to get to. We're just going through the timeline here. So the whole Bally Sports thing, this saga has gone on and on, and I tire of it because it is not fair to especially small market teams that depend on this TV revenue to as part of their finances. Bally is dangling this carrot that they could potentially drop Cleveland and Texas's TV contracts, and I think the whole thing is stupid. I think the courts have failed, but, you know, we saw this happen where they dropped the Padres. And the Padres didn't get all of that guaranteed money back. No matter how much the league tried to give it to them, it fell short, and it's put the Padres in a hole. They had to take out a $50 million loan to cover expenses, including player payroll. That's a problem. What the hell's going on here? Like, what do they do? Like, do they have a plan A and a plan B? I mean, I think they'd have to, wouldn't they?
So, this is only Major League Baseball could have this problem. Like, can you imagine, like, Like, the Texas Rangers are the World Series champions, and they're literally, like, getting dropped by their TV company. It's like, insane. I'm getting very worried about next season. I read somewhere that we're still going to get 80% or something like that of the fee for this season. Then next season is going to we're in trouble. I'm not panicking yet, but like it's a disaster, and I'm very concerned about where this is heading. I just don't see this ending well for baseball. Not just the Guardians, like the Twins. The Twins literally after making the playoffs just come right out and say we're cutting payroll. What are you doing?
Zach and TJ talked about that.
Like, what are you doing? It's just like, but the way Chris Antonetti really like. He really made it like obvious that payroll is an issue, or it's a concern. That's alarming. It's very, very alarming. And then he doubled down after the De Los Santos trade. Like we weren't in a position to do this trade without DFAing Cal Quantrill's projected $7 million. That stuff like that alarms me, but I have no idea where this is heading. But it sounds very bad. Justin, where are you on this?
It definitely is a baseball problem, and all the money that you saw spent over the last decade or so was from TV contracts. Like anybody you talk to in baseball, if there's money flowing, it's TV. It wasn't ticket revenue. Advertising dollars, sure. I mean, you got teams that are having advertising patches on their jerseys. I don't think those anything, you know, significantly.
They're not getting $55 million a year from that.
Right. So TV money was driving everything the last decade or so, if not longer. Now everybody's TV situation is changing, except for, you know, like the Yankees and the Mets and the
Dodgers. Know,
the Dodgers had a TV prop. They had a problem for a while. They weren't on a lot of networks because of, I think it was Spectrum or I don't know what they're on over there. They had a mess for a while over there and they fixed it finally. But yeah, everybody who's not, you know, the Phillies or the I almost said the Brewers. I'm looking at their page right now. Definitely the Brewers. Everybody is not a major market like New York or LA or Philly or Boston. They're all going to be impacted by this. And, you know, like Chuck said, like you both said, it's not fair to other teams. Yeah, you're not going to pay Milwaukee or Cleveland the same amount of money to broadcast their games that you would a Phillies game or a Dodgers game. Because let's be honest, you're going to have less households. You have less advertising potential for that.
Just nature of market size.
Yeah, it's simple mathematics. So you can't expect Cleveland or Milwaukee or Minnesota to have the same sort of TV contracts. And that is what it is. I don't know if baseball can really do something about that. I don't know what the national TV contract situation looks like. And I am curious to say, because Chuck, you brought up a good point about the 80% of covering those contracts. I haven't seen an update on that in a while. I know they said they were going to do that in 2023, but I do remember saying something they weren't going to guarantee that for 2024, or if it was just going to be a one-time thing for all clubs that got dropped from Bally's. So I'd be curious to see if they are still promising that heading into 2024. I don't know. I can't say I know 100% for sure. I might need to do more reading on that, but I didn't see any guarantee for that in 2024. So that's a huge issue right there. Hopefully they figure this thing out quickly, because Cleveland's got to have time to go out and negotiate their next TV deal. But the real problem is TV on baseball and TV has changed, right? This is never going to recover. You're not going to see these contracts be the way they used to be. So I would imagine that, let's say Cleveland gets a deal with some sort of TV provider and, you know, locally for games, there's a good chance they're not going to get $55 million. I mean, maybe they will. Maybe they'll make a great deal out of it. I don't know. But I think there's a good chance they're not going to get as much money as they did before, because, you know, cable cord cutting is a factor, and carriage fees are a factor. Getting it on, you know, YouTube TV and Hulu and all those kind of things. It's a very hard thing to get all those places to carry your channel, as we've seen. Yeah. So the money just may not be as you know, free-flowing as it used to in these TV deals. I think that's the real problem here, is they'll get one done. Major League Baseball will make sure the games are on and available, but how much money Cleveland can get for it is the big issue here.
Yeah, and I mean, $55 million is a lot of money to just up and disappear.
This is crazy.
Yeah, it's unprecedented. Like, you would never see this happen with the NFL, mostly just because the NFL would never let this happen. The league kind of, call me crazy if you want, but I'm going to put part of the responsibility for this on the league. And nobody could have possibly imagined that technology would have evolved the way that it did, that you could stream live TV on a mobile phone, you know, wherever in the world, and that digital cable services became a thing. But, you know, maybe about 5 years ago, I think the writing was on the wall that we were trending that direction, and nobody did anything about it. Because Bally is directly responsible for this problem, because Bally had the great idea, hey guys, we're going to create a product that people can subscribe to that is independent of cable services to watch local team games. So it's called Bally Sports Plus. The problem is, if you live in the Cleveland market, Bally Sports Plus didn't have the Guardians games. They only had the Cavs and something else, but they didn't have the Guardians. Why would I pay for that? And Bally, to promote their own product, pulled their contracts from all of the streaming services that they were on: YouTube TV, Hulu Live, Sling TV, all of it. So you lessen your market, and then they want to go to the courts and cry wolf. It's like, well, you guys kind of did this to yourselves. You shrunk your market, and then you didn't offer a product that people wanted. You should have to pay the consequences for that, which is why the courts ruled that when Bally tried to get the deals renegotiated, the courts ruled that they did have to honor the original agreement, which is why they're just going to drop it now, because they are in bankruptcy. They haven't officially filed yet, but they're restructuring debt for bankruptcy. It's a horrible situation. It sucks all around. Some of the guys that I've talked to, my dad's a big business major, said it's just foolish marketing and just bad oversight. They thought they could play the game and they lost, plain and simple. And the other people are going to pay the price for it, unfortunately.
They really overspent. That's the issue you have to go back here, is they, when Disney bought Fox, and they were forced by the FCC, it was the FCC? Yeah, I think the FCC said that they would have to move the regional sports networks because they have monopoly, because obviously they had ESPN. And then Bally's or Diamond Sports Group, Sinclair, whoever, you know, was the overhead here, they overspent on all of those networks, thinking that things were going to be the same, that this was going to be how, you know, money was going to be like this forever in sports and TV and baseball. I mean, like, you're right, it changed. But that's bad oversight for them not to be able to see the future of where they – cord cutting had gone – had started to become a big deal. This was obviously before, you know, 2020 and the pandemic and all that. But cord cutting had already taken off and was a problem. And this company was allowed to assume debt to take on all these networks. So that probably should have never been allowed to happen in the first place. The other issue here too is, like, I know you're blaming Bally, and I 100% agree with you, but don't let the owners off the hook in this situation either, because remember the sale of BAMTech several years ago?
Oh, this was there. Yeah.
That technology, very easily, they already had the technology. They already had the concept of how to use that technology to get into local network homes with something that already existed. The owners all voted to sell that technology and make a very, very nice cash grab on selling it, instead of hanging on to it and seeing, hey, cord cutting is an issue and we need a way to get into homes when people are not paying for cable fees because it's the price is crazy and they want to do other stuff. If they had held on to that, and they would have had, these are supposed to be good business people. And, you know, owners don't own baseball teams because they like baseball. Let's be honest here. They are trying to turn a profit for the most part. If they had had the business foresight to see this issue, they would have hung on to BAMTech and they would have had an easy solution right here. But instead, here we are.
Well, because now, you know, Disney bought 100% of that stake. And, you know, maybe it was that they didn't realize what the potential of it was at the time. But it's like you said, like, any person that lives in business, before you sell a major product, would be wise to do research on the future of that product. Whether they wanted the money, whether they wanted to clean their hands of it, whether they just didn't know what the hell it was. Yeah, they're culpable. 110%. You're right. You make a good point. I had completely forgotten about that. That was so long ago. But yeah, Major League Baseball owned a majority stake of that, and they just sold it. So that sucks. We're going to have to see what happens with that. Bally is probably just threatening that for leverage to get the deal reworked or whatever. Who knows? We're going to find out. But as we move on, something we can talk about, something else that just completely blew my mind, the Aniel De Los Santos trade. This to me is kind of where we start to get into the things that definitely don't make sense, because De Los Santos, yeah, he had kind of an up and down year. Chuck, I know he was your boy. And if you guys hung out on Twitter any of the last couple of days, you saw his wife, Melissa, interacting with some of us. They were obviously very fond of Cleveland and the fan base and the people. So that just makes it even more heartbreaking. But I think I just don't get it. Why are we trading for Scott Barlow? I don't think did we upgrade here? Are we better? Like, help me out, guys, because I'm swimming on this one. Barlow last year was, I don't know, he blew a lot of games in Kansas City. Help me out.
So Barlow, he was great in Kansas City for early in his career. Very durable arm, amazing slider. The metrics say that he's going to bounce back. My problem with it is, strictly from a statistical standpoint, Eloy De Los Santos may have been our second best reliever last year.
Yep. In a year that was filled with bullpen volatility out the wazoo.
So bullpens are weird. They're very volatile. One year they're great, one year they're not. And it's very weird. But strictly from a statistical standpoint, De Los Santos was like our second best reliever last year, and pretty high, very in high leverage spots too. So that's my problem with it. If it would have been like Eli Morgan for Scott Barlow, I would have been like very, very good, happy about it. But I worry about this bullpen. I just do. Stefan just, he had a rough second half of the year last year. Class A, I think, will be fine. But other than that, you're running out of high leverage arms. Maybe Cade Smith will help. But it's a big concern for me. So I just feel like we added a good reliever with upside. But I just feel like we subtracted one of our better relievers in our pen from last season.
And yet somehow we still managed to tender James Karinchak of all people. And that's, for those of you listening, that's not anything based on Karinchak's character. I don't think he's a good baseball player. Full stop.
I thought he was getting not tendered for sure. For 100%. I didn't expect Laureano to get over 5 million either. But I was stunned that Karinchak made it through.
I couldn't believe it. Unless there's something magical that he's working on in Arizona that we don't know about yet. Like, you couldn't keep Cal Quantrill.
Sorry. To be fair, when Karinchak got called back up, he had a rough first half. He got sent down. Then when he got called back up, he wasn't terrible. He wasn't horrible, to be fair. But I don't know. Let's see what Justin has to say on this.
We've seen how bad it can be. That's the problem.
Oh, no, I agree. But he wasn't terrible when he got called back up. The fastball is way down. It's not what it used to be. The spin rate's falling off a cliff. He's just,
velocity's down.
Yeah, it's not. It's pretty crazy how much it's gone down since 2020 when he came up. But yeah, he's just not the same pitcher he once was, but he wasn't terrible when he came back up at the second half of the year. Justin, where are you on this?
I think Cleveland upgraded for the year. Now the weird thing about this is how much they're paying Barlow. Like, right, there's a huge salary difference between the two, and you know, you guys even said, Chris Anthony said that Cleveland would not have been able to make this trade without clearing off Cal Quantrill's salary. So ironically, right now, all the money they decided not to pay Cal Quantrill, they decided to upgrade their bullpen. I do think it's an upgrade. I do think Barlow's got more experience in high leverage situations. He's got just more experience in general being a successful reliever. He did turn things around in San Diego. Everybody saw what was happening in Kansas City, and he was due for some positive regression, and he got it. We'll see if that holds up for next year. But he's got, you know, a pretty good track record of being a good reliever, and he now might be your third best reliever. And there were times last year where De Los Santos was up there in terms of their options. You know, everybody had had issues last year. Everybody fell off the wagon at some point. Doesn't matter who it was. It was Class A. It was Stefan. It was Henches when he first came back. Henches is the only guy in the second half that was like the most reliable you could think of. Just the weird thing here that was hard to understand is that De Los Santos has 3 years of control left. He's cheap. And Barlow will be a free agent at the end of the year. And obviously his salary difference is the same as Cal Quantrill. So very strange to see Cleveland do something like that. And
it doesn't match their normal MO.
It doesn't. And it, but it also, they took advantage of San Diego trying to cut some payroll. Let's be honest. The fact that they went out and wanted to take advantage of that says, you know, two things. Does it say they want to compete more in 2024? I think this is an upside play for 2024. I do. The other thing here too is that De Los Santos probably had reached his peak. I know, you know, you guys like him, and I'm sure he's a good reliever, and you know, lightly like Cleveland and all that. But he was actually worse this year than he was in 2022. If you look at the numbers, everything went down. So Cleveland sold high on De Los Santos and got something of value for him now, rather than, you know, if things regressed more in 2024 than they already had in 2023. And they felt like Barlow was a good enough upgrade. Also, here too is this: if things go sideways this season and things don't pan out the way Cleveland hopes,
trade bait.
Scott Barlow might become a trade asset for you. And relievers always go for a decent penny on the trade market because so few are on the move that are quality. So Cleveland has a chance to upgrade their bullpen in 2024, and it's a possible trade chip as well. If things don't go well, and I don't know that De Los Santos next season would have been as valuable to Cleveland as Barlow is. We'll find out, but there was more chance for De Los Santos to maybe roll backwards, and maybe they feel like they already helped him reach his peak, you know?
Yeah, and the thing is too, like, you know, it's a short-term move. It's not a, hey, this is going to be our guy for the next 4 years. So I think this move is in vain if there's not... And again, this comes back to the whole payroll uncertainty thing. Does this move make sense if you don't make any moves to secure your outfield insecurities? Does this move make sense if you don't go sign someone in free agency that you know you can sign to a multi-year deal that will help you? It's just, to me, it's weird. Like, yes, it helps you now. Yes, it gives you a fail-safe, hey, we can trade him and get something back if the season is completely kaput. But does it really help you? Yeah, it helps you, but there's still glaring offensive holes on this team. You still need a corner outfielder. You still need an outfielder that is better than Steven Kwan. And I love Kwan. Kwan's great. Kwan doesn't hit 20 homers a year. And guess what? We traded a guy that is probably going to hit 40 next year. That aside... I don't know. It probably makes us better. Barlow probably slots into the setup role. He goes pretty nicely with Trevor Stephan, who is due for a bounce back here. You still got Class A, whatever metrics they were having him work on under the hood that had him all over the place. I hope those iron themselves out. So, you know, at least your back three and the bullpen are set. But again, you know, what else do they have in store in the tank? And that leads me to my next question. What do they do about the outfield? You know, they just avoided arbitration with Ramon Laureano. They signed him to a 1 year, $5.15 million deal, I believe. So they avoided arbitration with him. It was his last year of arbitration anyway, before he becomes a free agent. You know, and if Laureano ends up playing every day, he can play all three spots. He's got a plus arm. He plays great defense. He smashes left-handers, which is what this team has needed. But now the problem is he's still in that fourth outfielder category. Brennan was not up to par with how he has hit historically in the minors. I don't know that we've seen enough of him to say that he's for sure that yet. I have definitely seen enough of Miles Straw to know that he is a bona fide nine hitter, late inning base runner, defensive replacement. So what do we do about the outfield? I mean, Heamy and the infield's pretty much set. You got Naylor, Jimenez. It's probably going to be a tag team of Arias and Rocchio next year at short. You know, the catcher situation got Bethancourt and Naylor. But what do they do about the outfield? Who's out there? Do you guys like Soler? You know, are the Padres going to try to shed Tatis's massive contract? Can you go trade for him and get the 5 years of his deal that are cheaper before it becomes exponentially ridiculous? That's my dream, by the way. I love Tatis. He's the only right fielder that posted a positive outs above average. You know, he can hit 30, 40 homers a year. He can steal bases. He plays plus plus defense. What are we doing?
So when this offseason first started, the two trade targets that stood out to me were Santander in Baltimore or Taylor Ward of the Angels. Angels are weird. You never know what they're going to do, so you don't know what direction they're going to go in. So I don't see that happening. Santander is very interesting from a value-to-value standpoint. He's really the guy that, even though he doesn't have any control after this year, he's the guy that I'd really look to acquire. But free agency is just out the window at this point. When you unless it's like, you know, coming in, maybe Teoscar Hernandez. I don't think so. He's repped by Rafa Nieves. He's very close to Jose Ramirez. I just don't see it happening because the market's so thin. They'll just get outbid. Then I went down to like Jock Peterson. I don't see it. Maybe Adam Duvall, but I just don't see free agency working out for this payroll situation right now. So you're looking at trades, maybe Slater in San Francisco, maybe
maybe like a Tyler O'Neill type, maybe.
Yeah, but then how much better are you really getting though? You need a difference maker in right field. So if Ramon Laureano is making $5 million on this roster, he's your guy. I mean, I hope it's in center field, but he's not. They're going to play him after paying him that money on this payroll. So he's going to play a good amount. I'm hoping it's in center field, but who knows? But they got to add a significant bat in right field. I'm just struggling to see where it's coming from. That's all. Yeah, Justin, where are you on this?
Yeah, I would say free agency is going to be tough because of the money situation for everybody. The TV deal, that's going to make it complicated, and it's a very weak class. It's a very thin market. So, and look, everybody needs outfielders. This is the thing I think a lot of people miss is that, yeah, Cleveland needs two legitimate starting outfielders to emerge, whether it's, you know, internal or external, however you want to do it. They need two quality outfielders, an upgrade of what they have or what they have had. And are you going to be able to afford – are you going to be able to be in the market to spend on guys in free agency when it is so thin and when there is TV money issues and all that? Like, there are some interesting options out there. The problem with, like, you know, Teoscar Hernandez and Duvall is this team is just, you know, anytime they see someone strike out, it's like they've seen a poltergeist. It's like, so Duvall and Teoscar just strike out. Wait, I almost said Oscar. Teoscar and Duvall.
We can use some swing and miss, though, a little bit.
I mean, it's not like we can't afford it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this. If the Phillies came out and said they wanted to trade Kyle Schwarber, and this question can go for anybody listening too, and I'll give you my opinion about how you answer. If the Phillies came out and said that they wanted to trade Kyle Schwarber and were willing to retain 50% of the remaining value on his contract, are you trading for him?
Yes. Well, yes.
Yeah. Justin?
Where's he playing?
Yeah,
he's a DH.
Yeah.
He should be a DH.
Yeah,
DH/ right field if absolutely necessary, because the Phillies trot him out there and left.
Are you? Well, it's that's only so because bad. They lost Rhys Hoskins. If they had Rhys Hoskins,
he'd be DH.
Then Schwarber would have been DH. And are you gonna block Kyle Manzardo by bringing in Kyle Schwarber? That's a question right there, because he should not. He really shouldn't own a glove at this point. Offensively, it's fine. I know a lot of people look at the batting average and be like, "Oh, that's terrible." But this team does need a hitter like that. And if money were an object, it'd be fine. But he really shouldn't touch a glove. Like, it's not a good situation.
Doesn't really fix the problem, unfortunately.
And this is a team that has a lot of fly ball friendly pitchers. Like, this is not a ground ball team. And you have Miles Straw, who's a defensive replacement basically, and you could bring him in the late innings. But yeah,
How do you see them addressing the outfield, Justin? I'm getting worried.
Yeah, it's going to be through a trade or like. He brought up Santander. I think he's an interesting fit because you want to be careful about not blocking like Chase DeLauder if that goes well. And you've got guys like George Valera who, yeah, any of your prospects that you're hoping knocks down the door and can get up there, you don't want to go out and find anybody too long term. Because if you do, then you might as well trade one or two of them, to be honest. So that's fine too. Like if they don't ever believe that George Valera is going to be the answer in right field, which good question, because he's never able to stay in the field, and he did not have a real good year this year. So if you went out and you got a long term solution in right field through a trade, you can turn around and trade George Valera. That's fine. Or yeah, you could acquire like a Santander, and you could hope that he holds you through for a year, and then next year Chase DeLauder is ready to assume right field, and you're just at either that or you're asked the same question again next offseason. The question is, because the trade market or because the free agent market is so thin, and then money is not going to be free flowing to these guys as usual, do you have some guys that are willing to take a pillow deal? Like Teoscar Hernandez did not have a good year. Would he be willing to take a Josh Naylor type, a Josh Bell type deal to try to replay his value and enter the market next year when maybe the TV situation is a little better and people have more payroll certainty? You could address it that way. But how many teams are going to turn towards trades too? Like if there's a lot of teams out there, like the Twins right now, I don't think are going to be heavy players in free agency. Are a lot of teams going to go out and also try to hit the trade market because they don't want to play in free agency either? So now you're in a bidding war trade-wise with Anthony Santander. And I also don't know what the Orioles need from the Guardians because they are stuffed with infield prospects. What is Cleveland stuffed with?
Infield prospects.
And are you going to trade Shane Bieber for Anthony Santander? Because to me, given the current shape of their roster, that's not going to work. I don't think you can trade. I don't think you can afford to trade Bieber for Santander straight up right now. Maybe if they go around the market and they that's all they can get and they think that's worth it, then they might. But I find it hard to believe that's all they would take for Shane Bieber. So what does Cleveland have to offer Baltimore that they really need, right? Because they need pitching.
Does Taylor Ward make sense to you, Justin? I know the Angels are weird and you never know what direction they're going to go in. But
Harry Minasian is a wild card.
I mean, the Angels are weird. You could, in theory, go in there and completely rip them off. Like, there are not a lot of teams with GMs at this point where you can say you can go in there and make a trade where you're like, wow, I think Cleveland or I think whoever just got a rip-off deal. Like, maybe the Angels are one of those teams because they're so goofy and the situation's so weird right now. I would not be surprised if Perry – there's only 30 of these jobs in baseball, so he might be careful, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is off out of there soon just because it's a hard situation to be in.
I was honestly surprised that he did not get fired because of how they handled the whole Shohei situation.
Why is that his fault, though?
Because you knew that Shohei was not going to re-sign. You could have gotten better than the comp pick for him. Like, nobody knew he was going to get hurt, but you could have gotten a better trade value than you would just for the comp pick.
But he's just under mandate from the owner. Owner's running that show. Why is that Perry's fault? I don't get that so much. I think
well, because in theory, the way that it should work is the general manager should be the one charged with going, this is what's best for the team. This is what's best for the direction. This guy has no desire to play here because we are a clown car of incompetence
when it comes to putting together
a baseball roster. We need to trade him.
But don't get it twisted. The buck stops with Artie Moreno.
It does. And Artie Moreno chose to keep him because Shohei was loved by the fans.
Yeah.
And that is why money is not always the biggest factor. I mean, yes, money obviously matters. You need to spend money. But that is why money alone does not make you a good owner. The Dolans, yeah, the money is definitely an issue with them. There's no doubt about that. But if you're not going to spend the money, you better get the heck out of the way and let your people make the best decisions for baseball.
Yep.
And, you know, Artie Moreno has money. Clearly he has money. But he doesn't stay out of the way. He tries to be Jerry Jones, and look how it's working out for him. So, yeah, it's not Perry's fault, I don't think. I'm sure whatever was going on over there came from ahead of him, and that's why I said I'd be surprised if he stayed. But there's only 30 of these jobs in baseball. You might not want to give one of those up. I understand.
Yep, and it comes down to the fact, like, we'll never know, but I'm sure that the laundry list of trade suitors and what they offered for Shohei you know, if any of us ever got to see what those looked like, we'd be salivating, because it would be, you know, for those of us that like blockbuster trades like myself, it'd be the holy grail of trades. You're looking at maybe a 6-for-1, maybe even a 7-for-1, you know, that type of deal. All right, Justin, so we're coming up on our time that we have with you. So
I just want to ask Justin real quick on two.
Go ahead.
Two baseball offseason questions. Justin, real quick.
You're covering your mic, buddy. We can't hear you.
Real quick, where's Ohtani going, Justin? Dodgers?
Oh, man. I'm gonna say Dodgers.
And do you think Soto gets traded?
Yeah, you know, I do think he'll get traded. I think there's a good chance of that. I think they're going to want to hang on to Fernando Tatis. I did read a column the other day talking about how they're going to hang on to a lot of their core guys, but they don't have Soto re-sign, so he's not really a core guy right now, as good as he is. So I could see him getting traded. I could hang on for a little bit longer if you guys want. I got a few more minutes, so
that works.
If you guys want to keep rolling, or if you have anything else you want to go on to.
Absolutely,
we'll keep your whole podcast.
No, dude, you know that we're glad. Yeah, this will be a good one. So, Major League Baseball owners met this week, and unanimously approved the Oakland Athletics move to Las Vegas. And there was, I believe, it was reported by The Athletic that 7 owners were considering voting no, which. Actually, with the Padres owner that passed away that was rallying them, would not have been enough to pass the 3/4 majority required by the Major League Baseball Constitution. The move would have been denied, thus sticking it to John Fisher and that the terrible owner that he has been to Oakland fans. But that's it. It's a done deal. The move has been approved. The A's are now free to contract the building of their stadium in Vegas. And I don't know if you guys read any of the banter this week, but they're not going to have a place to play after, what is it, 2024?
2028!
Well, so they're not going to have a place to play in Oakland, I think, after this coming season.
It's insane!
Their lease on the Coliseum expires at the end of the 2024 season. Where are they going to play? They're talking about playing games in their AAA stadium in Vegas. In the meantime, like, I have never seen a sports team be so incompetently run in my lifetime. It's just, I can't wrap my head around it. You don't have a place to play. You're giving the finger to the fans that have supported you for years and all the players that have come through and played for the Athletics and done amazing things. I can't. I cannot wrap my head around why. Why? Do y'all really think the market in Vegas is that much bigger? I don't think it is.
So here's
my problem. New stadium.
Yeah, Justin, I want you to say, Justin. So here's my problem with this. So you're the owner of the team. You want to sell the team. You want to move the team. I disagree with it. I hate it. I think it's insane. I think you're literally holding the stadium deal over your fans' heads. Want to move the team? Fine. You're the owner. You can do the team. But when you get on the microphone and you right after they approve the vote and you go, today is a great day. It's a sad day for Oakland, but a great day for Las Vegas. And then the night before, you're talking with fans who are there trying to convince you to stay, and you like an idiot go, this has been harder for me than it's been for you. What the hell are you doing? Like, seriously, what are you doing? Like, I don't want to judge and say this guy's like an evil human being. I don't know, but are you? You come off so low and so tone deaf. Like, what the hell are you doing?
Never. I feel like things never go well when you let billionaires speak. I mean, I don't. Paul Dolan. Has never, I don't think the Dolans ever said anything that outwardly horrendous. I mean, there was the whole
Lindor
enjoy
thing.
Him comment. Yeah, there was that whole thing. Not quite as egregious. Yeah, not quite as egregious as anything John Fisher said this past week. Yeah, never. It just never goes well. Like, that's why I always laugh when the first person to speak when a team wins a World Series title is always the owner. Like, and that's in a good moment. So what is he going to say to embarrass himself there, right? But it makes me laugh because, yeah, I just – anytime a billionaire speaks, I just feel like it never ends well. And he'd been better off saying absolutely nothing. But here we are. Like you said, he wants to say he's a villain, but he kind of is. Like, he was literally Rachel Phelps, was he not? They purposely went out and traded all their good players. He's been tanking for – they've been tanking for years trying to get out of that. Out of Vegas, it was to get so, or out of Oakland. They've been waiting so long to try to get out of there, and this finally happened for them. So I'd say you call him villain all you want, and people were like, "Oh, well, sometimes people need villains in baseball, but not like this."
Not like this, man.
But, yeah.
Well, and then Rob Manfred didn't help anything. Manfred didn't help anything with his absolutely Wild West shoot from the hip comments when A's fans showed up in mass last year to show their support and chant sell the team. Like, that there's a reason that the commissioner is elected by the owners. He is their puppet.
So Justin, I'm reading that they're going to rely like something crazy, like so much on tourism. And why would someone in the summer in Las Vegas go watch a baseball game when they're touring Las Vegas?
I can tell you, having been to Vegas in the summertime, the stadium is going to have a retractable roof. Period.
Well, there was talk about how they would have to have a permanent roof because the plot of land that they agreed to put the stadium on or rent through, I think initially, and this could have changed, this could have been a few news cycles ago, they had talked about how the piece of land they were going to build on was not big enough to support a retractable roof. So it might have had to be a permanently indoor stadium, which you're right, has to make sense. I just don't see how you can have an outdoor only stadium in Las Vegas in the summer. It's going to be like Texas was before they had a retractable roof or any kind of roof before. So, and I've never been to Vegas, but I got to imagine, like, if you're traveling there, I can go to a baseball stadium in Cleveland. I can go to a baseball stadium in Pittsburgh. I can go in Atlanta. I can go in Florida. I can go in Texas. I can go in Chicago. I can go in Wisconsin. Why am I going to Vegas to see a baseball game? Like, I can see that anywhere else.
You go to Vegas to see the things that you can't see anywhere else. You go to see Cirque du Soleil.
There's a lot
you go
of that, to isn't see there?
Yeah, there's tons of it. Bro, Vegas is so weird. Don't even get me started. That is an entirely separate conversation. Vegas has some weird stuff, but you should go check it out if you ever get the chance. It's cool. You will see more weird things on the sidewalk on the Vegas Strip than you will ever find in a modicum of your regular daily life. The whole thing with the A's is unfortunate. It sucks, dude. My heart breaks for A's fans so bad. Like, if you're a Cleveland fan, put yourself in their shoes. Could you imagine? This would be like if the Dolans outright came out and said, "We are fed up with Cleveland. Screw y'all and the support you've given us over the years. We're going to tank for the better part of 3/4 of a decade. We're going to bitch about the stadium. We're going to complain about the area. We're going to smack the fans in the face with comments that we make. We're going to field the worst product possible. And then we're going to celebrate moving." You would be enraged. I would be. I know the majority of you that listen to this would be.
Let's say if Paul Dolan doesn't get a deal done for Progressive Field with the extension of the lease a few years ago, is it possible we're in this situation?
If they didn't get something done, I would have definitely started to look. The Nashville option would have been concerning. The only thing that would have kept him here for a while was that Rob Manfred had kept saying that there was going to be no expansion until, or nothing was going to change until Oakland and Tampa Bay got their stadium situations figured out. So I don't know if he would have let Cleveland move on top of everything else going on with those two franchises. But yeah, if they didn't get a deal done with the city, then they definitely could be looking at the same sort of situation, which is always going to be a concern, especially with support right now in Cleveland. Attendance was up in 2023, so that's good.
41%, to be specific.
Yeah, I think it's fine now, but like I've been saying, I think this stadium village, this ballpark village concept that seems to be popular, that they brought on David Blitzer for real estate purposes, is part of this. Like that's going to be a huge, huge thing. So I think they had that, at least they had that kind of chip to play, whereas Oakland really didn't. And I'm not excusing their move or how things went in any way, but that's what Cleveland was looking towards, and thankfully they got it done. Because yeah, absolutely, if that deal did not get done, I could see them exploring their options. I think what really would have happened is the Dolans would have sold, right? If they didn't get a deal done with Cleveland to keep the team here in the ballpark for X amount of years, I could have seen them selling the team. This is all speculative, right? So they could have seen them selling the team to somebody else and letting them decide what to do, right? Letting them decide, do they stay, do they go? Because I think for all the negative things you can say that's happened under the Dolans, I don't think they would be the ones to move the baseball team out of here, considering they are from here. So I feel like things wouldn't go that low. Not with them, but hey, if David Blitzer assumed full control before this and was like, hey, the money's not here, the deal's not here, let's go. And the Dolans can just
go away. That'd be the end of it.
Team. Yeah.
That would be unfortunate. I have never known a day of my life on this earth without Cleveland baseball. We need to pray to the baseball gods that never finds its way into reality, because the moment I have to start accepting that the Browns are the only team that I halfway care about in Cleveland, it's a bad day. So I do like the Cavs, but the Cavs are struggling right now. They are down bad. They got a lot to figure out.
Zach, I have a few more for Justin while I have him.
Hit him.
I value Justin better.
Absolutely, Justin, hit him.
How do you see shortstop playing out this year? It feels like it's going to be Arias, but is there a chance Jimenez plays short? What do you think?
I think Jimenez only plays short if both Rocchio and Arias struggle, and Brito is really knocking on the door, which could happen. I think right now what it looks like realistically is you go into spring training and Rocchio and Arias are kind of both vying for that job, with Arias probably having a leg up as things currently stand. And then if both of them struggle to acclimate themselves next season, yeah, I could see Arias moving to short, and it also has to portend that Brito is making it seem like he has to be in the lineup, which, you know, that could very well happen too. I do have some good thoughts for Juan Brito's future.
I think I completely forget that Juan Brito is a person sometimes.
Do you really think, is second base his only path to the majors, Justin, really?
Unless it's like left field, yeah, I don't really see where he's going to fit somewhere else. I saw him at third base last year, and he struggled, and Rugo Sodor just kept talking about he's working at third, and the reactions didn't look really all that good there. And even, you know, third base is spoken for, so what does that matter? It's kind of funny they had him working out third base anyway. Yeah, I don't see shortstop as an option for Juan Brito. I think it's left field or second base.
You see some of that in the Guardians farm system, though. Columbus does that. They'll rotate infield guys through different positions. They'll rotate all three outfield spots. You know, guys get, at least in the Guardians farm, they do get some pretty diverse playing profiles to make sure that they're getting time. They do a pretty good job of balancing it.
And Justin, where are you on Joey Cantillo for this year? I thought he was a little, like, I thought it was very encouraging that he got through the year. I thought that was the most important thing. Regardless of the stats, regardless of the metrics, I thought what was most important for him was throwing 100 innings in the minor leagues. Where are you in him?
Yeah, it was definitely important for him to finish the entire year from April to or March, really, to September for the first time since 2019. It's the first time since he's been in Cleveland that he was able to do that. He definitely wore down at the end of the year. The velocity was kind of down, and he became a little more hittable towards the end of the season. But up through August, I think he was pretty fantastic. So, you know, if anything happens to one of your five, as you know, unless Cleveland goes out and makes any sort of depth move pitching wise, you know, you have the option of going to Cantillo as a sixth starter or Gattis. If it's a short term thing, you know, maybe Gattis works as a doubleheader starter. And if it's a long term injury or, you know, God forbid something happens, Joey Cantillo probably is a good move to see what's going to happen with him. So I don't think you're going to see Daniel Espino back until summer.
At the earliest, I think, and that's even maybe being a little optimistic. I got one for you. So Chase DeLauder had a very good minor league season spread across the levels that he played, and he also just terrorized the Arizona Fall League. Caveat that with some of the pitching in the Arizona Fall League was not that great. There were some good pitchers, but there was also some not great pitching. Is there a path where the Guardians decide that George Valera is not it, or he's hurt? DeLauder is destroying Double A, goes to Columbus. You know, he's batting 350. He's hitting nukes. He's hitting the gaps. He's running bases. Do you see him potentially playing in the majors this year? If that happens, do they have a choice?
I mean, you're talking about obviously best case scenario for everything here.
The stars have to align.
I guess in that scenario, sure, that could happen, but I don't think the probability of that is super high. This is going to be the first time he's going to be challenged pitching wise, I think, in his entire career. He hits Double A, so I just don't know how he's going to handle upper level pitching right now. And I think Cleveland's going to want to, first of all, he has to get through a full season healthy himself. Talk about George Valera always being hurt. DeLauder has not ever really played. Like, the most he has ever played in his career was this season. And that was from, you know, June until the AFL in October. So he has never really been on the field himself this entire time. So he needs to get on the field for 100, 120 games first as well. I just don't know if this year is the right time to do that. I mean, great, if he's hitting 350 and he's got, you know, 20 home runs or whatever in AAA or AA, like, then yeah, you could say that it's hard to not believe that he couldn't help you right now. But I think he's really got to pass those tests of handling upper level pitching and being on the field consistently before you can get there.
Are you worried? Just throw health out the window. Just throw the ability to stay healthy out the window. Are you worried about Valera's profile long term? Just a lot of swing and miss. Where are you on Valera, Justin?
He's a thumper.
Yeah, there's definitely enough. I don't think there's enough swing and miss in there to like think it's going to be like a major issue. Like, is he going to strike out? Yes, he's going to strike out. I don't think he's going to be an all-star type right fielder. I just don't think that's his ceiling at this point. I thought that a couple of years ago, but how things have played out, I don't believe so. Doesn't mean he can't be a good player at the major league level with health. I think he can. It just depends on this team's aversion to strikeouts. Like, the hard part too is that walks, like, this is part of the issue. I think this is part of things I missed on Will Brennan when he was coming up as a prospect, because I really liked Will Brennan and I still do. But I think you have to look very closely at the kind of hitter he is and be careful to avoid looking at the stat line, because minor league pitching right now is so bad. It's really bad. And, you know, yeah, you've got your Daniel Espinos and you've got your Joey Cantillo, or even he walks quite a few guys. But, you know, you've got your upper echelon of pitching prospects in the minors, right?
Parker Messick. But outside of
Parker Messick. But, I mean, you've got your upper echelon of guys, right? So you want to see how he does against them, but the problem with minor league pitching is you've got 10, 20, 30 guys that are going to be like really good in the majors, and the rest are going to be either minor league depth or they're just going to be roster filler in the majors. And walks and strikeouts, the minor level strikeout, I guess if you strike out too much, it's always a bad thing, but the walks aren't always translating one-to-one because there's just bad pitching in the minors. And, you can take non-competitive pitches very easily in the minors and struggle to either just, you know, make swing decisions on the stuff that a Garrett Cole can throw you versus, you know, the guy that's 27 and barely hanging on in AAA. There's a big difference there. So I think Valera doesn't strike out so much that it's, you know, he's not going to be Bobby Bradley. But I just don't see him becoming an all-star right fielder. Like I said, it doesn't mean he can't be a good player in majors with health. Certainly has more power than most guys on the team right now, outside of like a Naylor, the Naylors, I should say, and Jose. And they could use that. I just don't know whether or not he's going to be able to do it full time. Like, he's got issues with lefties, and are they going to allow any hitter to strike out over 25% of the time? Because unless you are Mike Zunino or Miles Straw or any of the defenders, they feel like adds so much value defensively. They don't like, that's the only way they allow your strikeout rate to be high, is if you bring so much defensively to the table that it's hard to ignore. And that's not Valera. So it just depends on how much they're willing to live with the swing and miss with him.
All right, last one for me, Justin. Now we have Laureano, Will Brennan, Miles Straw. They're probably going to bring someone in to right field externally, I hope. How do you see center field playing? Is this the year we finally get Miles Straw as a defensive replacement? Because I don't see it. I got a feeling Miles Straw is getting 400 pass next year, wherever happens in this offseason. How do you see center? And what happens with Brennan? What happens with Oscar Gonzalez? What do you see happening there?
I mean, I can see Oscar Gonzalez not being on the 40-man roster going into the regular season. I don't think it makes sense to have Rodriguez and Gonzalez on the 40.
I agree.
Both ways.
Yeah, I think the Rodriguez ad was their sign that it's like, hey, we've accepted that Oscar is what he is. We need to give somebody else a look.
If they don't acquire an outfielder externally, I think you'd probably give Miles Straw like one last chance to, you know, for April, May, whatever it is. And if things don't go well, yeah, I think you see his playing time reduced again if that does happen. If Laureano proves to be a better option and other alignments continue to be better. If they don't acquire anybody externally, they're probably gonna play him though, because they do have the money tied to him. And that's the other thing here to kind of, you know, to bring the conversation in a full 180 here, or 360. I don't know. What's the right term there?
Full circle, 360.
All right. So to bring in 360 here, I guess 180 would be a whole other direction. Yeah. It was not a math major, just in case anyone was curious. To bring this 360 though, is how much control is the front office going to have over who plays, right? Because you're bringing in a rookie manager, and you know, we saw some of this with Tito too, is it's a collaborative approach. And there were, you know, little reports that snuck out here and there that Tito might have wanted Bo Naylor before they got him up here, because they wanted to see if they could squeeze anything else out of Mike Zunino in that contract they gave him. How much would Stephen Vogt be forced to play Miles Straw? Because, you know, he's a rookie manager and they have all this money tied up to him, and they might say, we're trying to get what we can out of this contract because we just have to. Like, that happens a lot with Cleveland. They don't bail on those contracts. So if he's here, I think he's going to play until he proves that, you know, if it gets to June, he's really doing poor again, I could see him get reduced playing time then. But it's going to be hard to not play him if he's here, though.
Makes you wonder what type of agreement is between the lines with Stephen Vogt. You know, things that they talked about during the interview process. You know, what precedent did the front office establish when they hired him? You know, that could entirely play into things like playing time decisions, who they want to see, when they want to see him as well. And, you know, they could have also handed off the reins to him and said, here's the keys. Go to spring training and tell us what you see, which I hope that would be the case. I mean, but again, I mean, we know that Cleveland has had this precedent before where it was a bit collaborative, and other times, you know, Tito was just outvoted. So I think it'll be curious to see how that plays out as time continues. So
outvoted. I see what you did there.
little play on words. That's a dad joke. Well, boys, we still got a long off season. There's still a lot that can happen. There's free agents out there, some guys that probably wouldn't cost very much. Chuck, you mentioned Jacques Peterson. I was pretty high on Jacques Peterson 2 seasons ago. I really like Jacques Peterson. I personally think that Jacques Peterson is a big part of the reason that the Braves went on to win the 2021 World Series. He's a big clubhouse guy. He's good for clubhouse culture. He's a winner. He's got World Series rings. He knows, you know, what that looks like. But Justin, before you dip out of here, I want to just kind of get your thoughts on maybe a direction we can look forward to for the rest of the offseason. Like I said, still got a long way to go. We are still months away from spring training. So what can we look forward to here in the next couple months?
A lot of speculation. They just got to let the market play out. You've got to let Otani obviously sign, and most teams will look for free agents and spend the money rather than trade the players, even though I think contract offers will be a little bit depressed this offseason due to TV deals. Or maybe the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Mets will just scoop everybody up because they have money and everybody else is looking at TV hell. I don't know. Depends on, you know, the White Sox are going to be, or look like they're kind of listening to everybody. So it's going to be very hard for Cleveland to make a deal with the White Sox, I feel like. Like, interdivision trades just don't happen like that.
You see that happening? You think Jimenez and Cease are going to get dealt real quick? I know you got to go.
I think Cease is going to go. I don't know about Jimenez, but I think Dylan Cease is definitely being traded. I would guess that, yeah.
Yeah, they're in a
so Cleveland might have to wait for the market. Yeah, I think it might be a little bit slow at first for Cleveland. I think you may have to wait until, like, January. I mean, I didn't think anything was going to happen in the winter meetings for Cleveland last year, and they signed Josh Bell. But I think they also saw this weak free agent market coming this year and the TV deal drying up, and made a move last year when they had the money. So it could be a very slow off season, and they could wait until January for the market to play out before you see them mention anything. Just remember, if Cleveland's mentioning a rumor about something, it's probably not true, because how often does Cleveland get mentioned in a rumor? So
yep.
Be careful who you believe and what you listen to out there. That's why Glad Chuck said when Jeff Passan tweeted about Stephen Vogt that's who he felt would be the thing. I always wait for either
Passan, Rosenthal, or Cleveland specific things. You know, Zach Meisel's pretty on top of stuff. Those are who you need to listen to. All right, quick hitter for you before you bounce. Otani's going to sign somewhere. How long and how much?
Dodgers will do a 3-year deal with an opt-out after 2, and then, well, he'll have an opt-out in there. I don't know how long, but he'll have an opt-out in that contract early on, I feel like. So I would say Dodgers, but could be long with some opt-outs or could be short with an opt-out.
How much do you think he's getting paid?
And like, I don't know. I'm not gonna go total. Like, I think he could get $500 million, but the TJ does complicate some things. I'm gonna say he's gonna get an annual average value of like $35 to $40 million.
Yeah, that's what I was figuring. Something up near like the upper end of like Tatis's contract and Mike Trout territory. Could be even more. Who knows? If somebody signs him to like a 10-year deal, you know, you could be looking $37 to $39.
Could be like $600.
Yeah, it could be over 600 for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Justin, thank you for your time. I know you got to bounce. We could sit here and talk all night because it's what we do. I am so thankful always for the time that you provide to us.
You're the best, Justin. I love you, Justin. Yep. You're the best.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you.
Godspeed to you, man, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right. Sounds good. Take it easy.
See ya.
Happy Thanksgiving, Justin.
Yep. Have a good holiday,
man. Go Bucks.
Go Bucks. It is officially Beat Michigan week. So, huge thank you to Justin, as always, for hanging out with us. Guys, I'm not kidding when I say this. We are so incredibly blessed that we have a plethora of people that know Cleveland baseball, have access to the resources to be knowledgeable, and they share our time with it. They share their time with us. Couldn't be more thankful. Justin is always super knowledgeable. Chuck, we got some questions to answer if you want to do mailbag.
Yes, let's knock it out real quick, Zach.
Alrighty, so we had just a couple, which is no surprise. It's the off season. Most people are not regularly perusing Twitter. I'm getting tagged in spam again. Holy crap. All right, so we've got one here that says, name the player. This one's from VJ Goff. I actually don't even know how I got sent this one because he doesn't follow me. It was probably from Justin's retweet. Name the player in the org not on the pipeline top 30 that you think can provide the most value to the 2024 Guardians. And why is it Jack Leftwich?
I gotta say, I was very high on Jack Leftwich when he first was drafted. He was one of the more disappointing prospects in the system last year.
Yeah, he did have a pretty rough year.
I still think there's a major league starter in there. He needs to have a very good year. I still think there's a major league starter in there. I'm hanging in there on Jack Leftwich. Oof. To the question, I'm gonna go with Cade Smith. He's on the 40-man roster. Have a very good chance of making the team. May not make it out of spring training, but I think he's gonna get some big innings this year. I really do.
It could be a Timmy Herron situation from last year too, where he finds himself unexpectedly on the team, you know, due to injury. I like that. For me, non-30. That's a tough one, man. Most of the guys that will make a difference are contained in this list. I mean, even like Jonathan Rodriguez and Dian Frias are on here. Non-top 30. I don't know, man.
Maybe Jonathan Rodriguez.
He's on the top 30 at 24. I think I'm going to cheat on this, mostly just because he's towards the bottom of this list. I think he's borderline Doug Nikhazy. I know you do. That's one of the reasons I picked him. But, you know, he very quietly had a pretty decent season. He's probably going to start the year at Double A again. I could very much see him getting moved to Triple A, mostly just because the Triple A pitching depth has been depleted. And, you know, you want guys at Triple A that can pitch competitive and keeping games. Obviously, nobody cares about winning minor league games. It's about player development. But still, you know, if Nikhazy has plateaued at Double A, you want to get him up there and see what he's got. He's probably a 2.5 to 3-star prospect type guy. His upside is pretty good. You know, maybe his ceiling's a little low, but I think that's where I'm at with that. We have a couple others. Let's see here. Oh, this is a good one. Janelle asked us, give me your dream starting lineup and a more realistic lineup for the guards on opening day.
So I'll go Kwan, Ramirez, Naylor.
Ooh, you got Hosey in the two hole?
Yeah. Then I'm going to go Anthony Santander. Batting fourth.
Okay. I like it.
Fifth is going to be Jimenez, Andres Jimenez batting fifth. Then we got to mix the righties and lefties a little bit. Probably Laureano, because I want Laureano in there over Miles Straw, even though that's probably not going to happen. And then I'm going to go Bo Naylor. And who am I missing? Who am I missing?
Did you get Bo?
Yeah, I did.
I missed Jimenez?
I put in Jimenez. Who am I missing? I think I covered everybody. Well, Manzardo.
You have him make, okay. So.
He has to make the team opening day. I'd probably go Manzardo after Jimenez batting sixth, then Laureano batting seventh, Naylor batting eighth, and then I think it's Will Brennan batting ninth, I assume. Yeah.
I like Brennan as a nine hole. That's not bad. I think dream for me, and I'll get called crazy for this because it's never going to happen, but Tatis at one. You put Hosey at two. I mean, that combination right there wins ball games, folks. Like, dear God, you have Tatis and then switch hitting Jose Ramirez right behind him. Oh, a man can dream. Okay, so I'll go Tatis, Hosey, I'm going to go Josh at three, mostly just because I want him getting as many at-bats as possible, especially with how he developed versus left-handers that we saw this past year. And then I'm going to go a little unconventional. I'm going to go Bash Brothers style and put Bo Naylor in the cleanup spot. I think they like Bo's bat at the bottom of the lineup to help turn the card over. However, I mean, we've seen Bo's upside offensively, and he absolutely should be batting top five. Now, I'll get some heat for this because I'm going to go Jimenez at five. Hemi had a bit of a down offensive year, and there's some speculation out there as to what the hell was going on. I very much think that they messed with his approach at the plate, and it got him all kinds of jacked up. They'll get it worked out. Spring training will come. He's going to be fine. Then I'm going this. See, this is where things get weird because Kwan is in the six hole. Why did I put Kwan in the six hole for this? Because you're now at the bottom of the lineup after your offensive powerhouse. You need guys to get on base and keep moving that lineup card forward. So I put Kwan in left. I'm going to go Brennan in center at, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's seven. And then, man, this is a tough one. You got your DH batting in the eight spot. Maybe just for the beginning of the year, you put Manzardo at eight, and then Arias at nine is my spot. Hang on a second. Okay, sorry about that. I'll have to edit out that little blank spot. Realistically, what I see the lineup looking like, it's probably going to be very much similar to what last year was. You'll have Kwan as your leadoff. I could see Vogt putting Jose at two. Maybe Heaney at three with Josh batting four. You're probably going to get Brennan or Laureano in the five spot. And then the bottom four is any combination on any given night. You're probably batting Bo in the sixth spot. You're probably putting Arias in the eight spot or the seventh spot. And then the last two are pretty much interchangeable, you know, whether it's Straw or whoever. Sorry, I'm drawing a brain fart. I got caught mid-thought. I think the lineup construction is going to very largely depend on, one, the roster construction, and two, how spring training plays out. Do I think Kyle Manzardo makes the team out of spring training? Absolutely not, because we saw how they played that crap last year. There was no way that they should have kept Mike Zunino as long as they did. They still trotted him out there. I don't know how many at-bats he finished the year with, but it was entirely way too many. And that's just, it's just the reality of it. Baseball allows service time manipulation. Teams are foolish not to do it. And, you know, we're actually seeing that play out why they do it, because Tanner, because he finished second in the Rookie of the Year voting, he gets a full year of Major League Baseball service time, which means he is 1 year closer to arbitration, which means he is 1 year closer to free agency. So that's why teams do that, guys. Like, it's no joke. Cleveland didn't have a choice but to play him because who else were they going to pick? And injury necessitated that. But that's neither here nor there. So we've got just a couple more. So Jack asked us, why did they trade De Los Santos? We kind of talked about that with Justin. I actually think we did a pretty good job of wrapping that up. Let me see if we got any other comments here real quick. And let's see here. Nope, that's it. Actually, we have just a couple that my dad sent me. So my dad asked, what are the likely plans for Shane Bieber? So we've touched on that. I think we've kind of talked about what differences of any to anticipate under a new manager. We touched on that. But a good one would be, what prospects are we most likely to see brought up in 2024? I'll let you lead with this one, and then we'll wrap it up.
Not in any particular order of appearance. I'm going Juan Brito, Joey Cantillo, Jonathan Rodriguez, Cade Smith, Franco Alamon, and I think Will Dion makes it too.
Okay, you think Will Dion makes it?
I do.
Okay, that's interesting. He'd have to be added, but I mean, we've seen them play roster roulette for the last two seasons. They know how to squeeze everything. I think at this point, if we reach January and they have not signed an outfield free agent of some fashion, I think they're pretty committed to having George Valera probably ready to call up at some time in May, June, maybe, provided that he stays healthy and, you know, the wheels aren't falling off the cart. We'll probably see Jonathan Rodriguez. We are definitely going to see Cade Smith. We know that pitching depth is crucial. Guys get hurt. Guys get tired. Guys get dead arm and go on the IL for a week. They obviously see something in Cade Smith because they protected him, which leads them to believe that, you know, they think someone would take him. And, you know, relievers are prized, especially when it comes to depth. As far as others, I don't know, man. Maybe Cantillo, or it's kind of hard right now because we went through so much prospect depth last year. We haven't really gotten a good look at AAA of what's still in the tank. I can tell you that reliever depth is hurting. There's a lot of guys at Columbus that are 4A relievers, you know, guys that are probably career minor leaguers. Maybe there's some pitching at AA. I could see Jack Leftwich, if he has a good start to his season, getting a call to fill pitching depth. And again, that's because guys get hurt. It happens. And pitching depth is important. However, I don't think it'll be as bad as the JC Mejia experiment. So that's kind of where I'm at. So that's it. That's all we have. I think that's a good spot to leave it on. As always, if you guys listen to this podcast, thank you for listening to us ramble, and I'm glad you guys enjoyed it, and we'll see you guys next time. So there you have it. There is quite a lot going on in this episode, and I apologize for going off the rails at the end. I was tired, and we had talked about a lot of really good stuff. We will have more to talk about as the offseason continues. You know, spring training's coming up, Rule 5 draft is coming up. Does Cleveland, you know, go out and take another guy? Who do they lose to the Rule 5 draft? And then before you know it, the holidays will come to pass, the new year will come, and then at that point, spring training is pretty much 4 weeks away. So take this time to enjoy the holidays. You know, a lot of you guys are football fans. Football's still in swing. If you're a Browns fan, it's a good time to be a Browns fan. Still lots of really good football. Buckeyes play Michigan in the game this week. So lots of really good things to hang on to. Hockey's in season two. Blue Jackets are struggling a bit. But yeah, I want to thank you guys for listening. As always, this podcast would not be possible without your support and all the interaction that you guys give us. This podcast is produced, edited, and published by me, your host, Zach. If you guys have any questions, you can look in the link, the description to this podcast. You can find all of our Twitter handles. I'll make sure you guys know where to find Justin on Twitter as well. I know I still say Twitter. It's X now, and that's just a habit that's going to die hard. So until next time, this is Zach from At the Corner, and on behalf of my co-host Chuck and our special guest Justin Latta, thank you guys for listening, and we will see y'all next time.